Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so every time we're going to bash the university system, every time we're going to start mocking the investment and all the massive student loan debt that's out there to send kids off to college to study what? I mean, what are the things that we sit there and go, oh, what a colossal waste of money, time and money, and just ridiculous. So there's like home economics. I don't even know if we do that anymore. We kind of, you know, basket weaving, African-American studies, gender studies. But what is always on the list of philosophies that seem to, in the modern world, have absolutely no bearing on real life whatsoever? It's a colossal waste of money and time. And of course, if your kid wants to go off to a major university for which you're going to go into debt for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, and they say they want to be a philosophy major. I want a major in philosophy. And all of a sudden there's weeping and gnashing of teeth and you're tearing your clothes and crying out, "No, Lord, my son or daughter is lost to the world of academia." Is that the reality of studying philosophy? Well, today our good friend on the show, back on a Theology Thursday from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, I'm looking at his extensive bio on the Southeastern Baptist Seminary website, and it says that his discipline, the core of who this guy is, next to his love of Christ and Christ's word, is philosophy. So none other than Dr. Jamie Dew. Is that what we're supposed to say now?
No, you're not like double P.
Dr. Jamie Dew.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy and the Dean of the College at Southeastern. Welcome back, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Guilty as charged, though. That is true of me. I do love philosophy, and maybe it's my fault that some of them have come to college and they go home and say, "I think I want to study philosophy." So we have a good time doing it, though.
So we can blame you for all of that.
That's right.
But I want to talk about that because, and by the way, for all of you, don't leave. Don't run away, because philosophy is actually very, very important. We're going to unpack that. And what is it? What is philosophy in the first place? What kind of philosophies are in operation out there? Because what you're getting frustrated at in the culture, in politics, in even in education, even in even what you're getting frustrated in some churches, in some evangelical world, that's going to come down to a philosophy. What kind of philosophy is operating there that's causing it? So you're going to find that philosophy runs into a whole lot of things as we unpack it today. So Jamie, so why did you choose to go into philosophy in the first place?
Great
for yourself.
Question. Yeah, great question. So I came to faith and I started sharing the gospel with people around me at school and family and all those other things. And as you know, if you start sharing your faith with people, then eventually you're going to meet people that have all kinds of questions and objections and things like that. And so that was my story. I started sharing the gospel. People raised questions I didn't know how to answer. And so that took me into apologetics first, where we just try to defend the faith. And apologetics is one of those disciplines that really spans every discipline, from theology, New Testament science, to philosophy, everything. And as I jumped into to apologetics, I discovered that specifically for me, it was the philosophical questions that sort of bothered me the most. And so there I went. It was big questions like, is there a God? Is there, you know, we believe it, sure, but do we have any rational basis for believing that outside of just the fact that we believe it? So the questions like that bothered me. Questions about, say, for example, life after death, things like that, that really bothered me and concerned me a bit. And so for me personally, it was just specifically those types of questions that drove me into philosophy, and that's how I got there.
And then how do we even begin with a definition of philosophy?
Yeah,
I think that's one of our big problems.
Yeah, that's right.
We think philosophy, and we think I think, therefore I am, and it's this totally obscure, bizarre, ethereal way of thinking.
Right. So my students, the very first thing I do in a class when I teach a new class in philosophy, so introduction to philosophy, whether this is in the college or in the seminary, I ask the question, first of all, I put them in a group of two, and I'll say, you tell me, what is philosophy? And I just want to see them try to wrestle with and struggle with that question for a minute, because they're going to feel the weight of that, and they're going to not know how to define it, and they're going to feel that that's their fault or something. But actually, that's part of the design. I want them to see that, because frankly, there are a lot of different ways to think about what philosophy is. Etymologically, that means the root of those words. It means love of wisdom.
Sure.
But really, there's a lot of ways.
Which we should all have.
We should all like that and be about that. But that doesn't necessarily make you a philosopher if you're just, you love wisdom and stuff like that. I mean, the Psalms and the Proverbs, for example, are filled with wisdom. And you might be more of a biblical scholar if you study those, right? So one of the things I want my students to see is that really two things about philosophy. First of all, it is what I call a very nosy discipline, in that it sticks its nose into everybody's mess and everybody's situation or their discipline. So theologians are doing philosophical stuff. Scientists are doing philosophical stuff. Historians are doing philosophical stuff. There's a reason I tell my students that people in all these disciplines get PhDs in their field, right? That's a doctor of philosophy. You can get that in physics or chemistry or philosophy or theology or whatever else. In short, what these people are doing is they are philosophizing about their specific discipline. And what I mean by that when I say philosophizing about it, what we all do in any of these disciplines, we start with a set of facts or a set of information, and then we try to explain that. That's a real basic way of describing it. But that explaining it involves things like hermeneutics, where you're doing interpretation. You're drawing inferences from facts to conclusions. When you formulate theories, and in theological circles we call that doing theology, all of those explanatory or inferential moves that you're making, those are philosophical movements. And so the first thing I want my students to see is that it's a nosy discipline. Now, having said that...
Yeah, but that also immediately points to its value.
That's right. And so because of that, it is absolutely inevitable that you're going to be doing philosophy at some level as a parent, as a student, as a child. It just is in every part of... Anytime human beings make those steps from, say, here's something that happened, I'm going to explain it with a theory, or something happened, I'm going to interpret it that way. Those are philosophical types of things we're doing, so it's inevitable.
Well, last night, or Tuesday night, we did a showing, we did a pre-screening for pastors and pro-life leaders and workers here in Raleigh of the movie Unplanned, the Abby Johnson story, all about her coming out of Planned Parenthood. And you saw there this this operational philosophy where you had all these women, and Abby Johnson herself would say, I'm helping women. I'm doing good. One girl in one of the scenes is like, hey, listen, I'm Catholic, and I was in church the other day, and they did this big anti-abortion thing, which was really offensive, but I know I'm doing God's will. There is a philosophy there.
Oh, absolutely.
That is an operation to explain how they can claim one thing and do another.
That's right. And so one of the things I want my students to see is that it is inevitable we are all going to do it. But the other thing is that as you make those steps and as you do those interpretive moves, you have certain values and assumptions that are operating in your mind as you make those moves. And if you don't see that, you're going to run the risk of really thinking poorly.
Yeah, you're going to have a problem. And so when we talk about apologetics and worldview, philosophy is intermingled with all of that, which is why it's important, which is why we're talking about it. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We're here with our good buddy, Dr. Jamie Dew. He's the Associate Professor of History of Ideas and Philosophy, the Dean of the College at Southeastern, the epicenter of his education, undergrad, grad, PhDs, is all around this notion of philosophy. And a lot of times we hear that and go, oh boy, my eyes are going to roll back into my head. They're going to use all kinds of weird words and talk about how do we know that.
We do use weird words.
You do use a lot. Yeah, extensive.
Yeah, we even have
vocabulary.
A glossary in the book.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because this is Jamie's new book, which is going to be available, in a couple of weeks?
About 2 weeks.
So Philosophy, A Christian Introduction with Dr. James K. Dew Jr. and Paul M. Gould. So tell us a little bit about the book right quick.
Yeah, so Paul and I are good friends.
And do I get a copy in a couple weeks?
We'll get you a copy of that for sure. Paul and I are good friends. He taught here adjunctively for a bit and a very well-respected philosopher in the evangelical world. And I don't know, early in my career, what I've really wanted to focus on is to write pedagogical works for teaching. So stuff that I would use in a classroom.
It's one of your words again, pedagogical.
That's right, one of those big, funny, but that one, you know, other people use that as well than philosophers. But anyway, there's brilliant people that are writing introductory books to philosophy, but I think, I wanted to really get something that was laid out a little more clearly for my students, and he did as well. So we just partnered together on this, and Baker was really, really good to us to pick up the book and to publish that for us. And so, yeah, we put it out. We laid it out in the topics that we would normally cover in a philosophy class at the undergrad or at the seminary level. You could really use that textbook for either one of those. So, yeah, so that's why we did it. We wanted to just lay it out in a very easy, very accessible way. So, you know, it includes several things that a lot of philosophy books won't have, like a glossary in the back and some things like that.
Because, to help us regular folks.
Yeah, you're right. We really do use goofy words. And I actually tell people sometimes that learning philosophy is a bit like learning a language because part of the battle is everybody's using language, even normal words, like that you think you know what that means in the regular everyday usage, like necessity or sufficiency. And things like that. But actually, philosophers use those words in very different ways.
They're a little more pregnant for you guys.
That's right. So everything has a particular meaning in philosophy. And once you learn those terms and the jargon for the field, actually things begin to fall together pretty quickly for most students.
And just as then I want to get back to your thought because you were in the middle of a thought when you hit the commercial break. So I want to back that up and go back to that and let you finish that. But just right out of the gate, a Christian that loves the Lord and is serious about the gospel, committed, convictional Christian, should have a working understanding of philosophy because
they live in a world that's being shoved down their throat in, right? So everything, think about the movements of our world right now, the major players of our world and the major influencers of our world. They are coming from a philosophical perspective and they're shoving it down our throat. And if you don't know anything about that, just makes it, I'm not saying you can't respond to it or you can't deal with it, but you are disadvantaged in it. And so a basic working knowledge is necessary for us. Then the second thing I would say is kind of to the first segment, it's inevitable. You just are going to do some philosophical things in your normal everyday-to-day thinking anyway. So why not learn how to do those things very, very well? Yeah. I tell my students at the beginning of my classes, look, for some of you, this might be the only philosophy class you ever take. You're going to say at the end of this course, I'm done, and I will say to you, Godspeed. I'm not trying to convert everybody to be a philosopher. But what I am going to try to do is make sure that you learn the basic nuts and bolts so that you can do it well.
Yeah. And so where were we before we hit the break? I know you're in the middle.
We were still trying to define what it is. And so, segment two, we're still trying to define what philosophy is. And I was making the point that in some ways philosophy is a nosy discipline. It gets into everybody's
business.
It gets
into everything,
But there is a sense in which philosophy has its own unique domains, right? So there are certain intellectual questions that it seems as though most – that are dealt with almost only by philosophers – or exclusively by philosophers. And so those are basically the headings of the book in the chapter when you go to the table of contents. So, for example, one major area of philosophy is something called epistemology, and that comes from the Greek word episte, which basically means to know. And so it's the study of knowledge. And so it's all those philosophical questions that are intellectual in nature, like can we have certainty? What is truth?
Well, yeah, you've got – I mean, just look at the list and you're cynical. Should philosophy be something we study? Well, check this out. Truth and knowledge, justification, skepticism, certainty, faith, reason, modern science, natural revelation, natural theology. The answer to that is yes, obviously.
Yeah, so all of those are good examples of epistemology where we're asking the philosophical questions that pertain to our knowing, right? So what does it mean to know something? We certainly think that knowing something is different from merely believing something. So to know seems to have a greater value to it than just merely believing. Right. But what's the difference? And that question's actually fueled much philosophy for several thousand years now. What does it mean for a statement to be true, right? So we depend. Think about this is a good example.
Well, because we say, it's true for me.
Yeah, so
for me.
Is truth just simply that which is relative
to
us?
My truth, and then there's your truth.
And that's actually what we call a pragmatic view of truth. So truth on that view, truth is just what works for an individual person. Yeah. But that's not the way that humans have actually thought of it. And I'm talking East, West, everybody throughout history, past, present, and future and everything. We don't think that way about truth. So for example, if I say I'm wearing a blue sweater today, your Facebook viewers can see that that's actually a true statement. And the reason they can know that's a true statement is because the statement lines up with the way the world really is.
Yeah, what's reality?
Right. So those are the types of questions we deal with in epistemology. We also do things like metaphysics. Metaphysics deals with the nature of reality itself, right? Is nature physical? Is nature non-physical? Is it a mixture of both? How do we make sense out of common features in different objects? So like, for example, here's a red Coke can. Here's a red letter in the cup. Red is shared by these two objects, right? But it's different in some ways.
Yeah.
So how do we make sense out of those types of things? And so that's metaphysics. And then, of course, there's philosophy of
religion. Because we're doing that all the time.
All the time.
Every day.
That's right. We ask questions about, or we wonder about things. Maybe we don't ask these questions, but we wonder, how is it that things change and stay the same over time? So take, for example, your physical body, right? I take it, and I think you do too, and probably all your listeners do too, that the body I'm looking at right now across the table from me behind that microphone is the very same body, same in some ways at least,
yeah,
that was born, say, oh, I don't know how many years ago, right? But clearly, clearly it's not the same.
Was that a PC maneuver? You know, did it just 53 years ago?
I don't
ago,
know
exact.
The number.
Youngster.
I didn't want to speculate, you know.
See, you tried to get that
That's
philosophical
right.
jab humor
That's
thing
right.
in there,
That's
and
right.
I caught onto it. So there
yeah.
you go.
So yeah, you see the point, though, that this in some ways is the very same body that was born 53
yeah.
years ago. But in other ways, it's not the same one at all.
No.
Right? I mean, I assume that the body that was born 53 years ago was probably like 5 or 6 pounds or something like that. And
8 and a half.
Okay. Wow.
It's a bigger baby.
But you were a chubbo.
Well, yeah. And then one of our kids was a 10-pound baby.
Whoa.
Yeah, he looked like he was 6 months old. And
congratulations.
My wife didn't like that.
No, I can imagine.
She's
not.
Like, you told me this was going to be an 8-pound baby. And he's like, yeah, well, he's 10 pounds.
Yeah, the physics
right
of that is menacing.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
The
there was a lot of philosophy going on that day, I can assure
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I bet. So anyway, those are metaphysical questions. We have questions about religious things. We call this the philosophy of religion. Like, does God really exist? Are miracles
yeah.
possible? Do we survive our death? Those are philosophy of religion types of questions. And look, so why philosophy? Why does this matter? Well, I don't know. Don't you care about that stuff?
Of course.
I mean, it's kind of a big deal if
well,
God
listen,
exists
I think
or not.
We're sitting there, like I'm working on developing a couple new podcasts to reach to the 35 and under crowd. And there is an operational philosophy there that we don't understand. We just get so mad. We, you know, snowflakes, they're idiots.
Right.
I did a show on millennials recently. 59% of them, check this out. What kind of philosophy is behind this? 59% of them had a positive reaction to the word socialism. 61%
wow.
of them had a positive reaction also to the word capitalism.
What?
Right? So there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
See, now Jamie's sitting there shaking his head.
They're both great.
Going, what, yes. going, what in the world? There is philosophy behind that. Why do they think what they think? That's what philosophy helps you understand. Should you go to college for that? We'll get to that as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary here in Wake Forest, North Carolina. And always a great opportunity to kind of dive into the deep end of the pool, especially when Dr. Jamie Dew is here, our resident philosopher, and has spent years studying philosophy. And philosophy, as you said, Jamie, it's a great way of putting it. It's a very nosy thing because it just gets involved with all of your business. It shows up everywhere. And oftentimes we think of it as kind of an external, it's an outlier.
Right.
It's a weird major. If your kid wants to take philosophy,
yeah.
that's trouble. But it's integrated into everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of like an operating system.
Sure.
Philosophy is same thing at the same time as a worldview.
Right.
So I mentioned, I think I don't know if I said it on the air.
I think we're on break.
Yeah. So I did a show on millennials recently, and 59% of them said they had a positive reaction, excuse me, to the word socialism. And while at the same time, 61% of them had a positive reaction to the word capitalism. Completely opposite systems.
Yeah.
So what's going on there that they would have a positive reaction to things that are actually equal or opposite to one another and antagonistic of one another,
yeah.
yet they would react positively, both of them? That's because their philosophical basis and systems
That's
are
right.
all screwed up, really.
That's right. I think you can have a situation like that precisely because we've developed and nurtured a culture wherein we have not thought. We've deliberately chosen not to think philosophically
right.
about things.
We feel, we react.
That's right.
And we don't think well.
That's right. We're reaping what we've sown. And it's, listen, I mean, they've gotten that from the generation right before that, right before
yeah.
them, right? So there's a trickle-down effect of all of this. And it's not to say that their parents think that way, but their parents at least had a generation before them that were a little more inclined
sure.
to think systematically like that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you get into it and they go, hey, I believe in a universal income for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think that seems right. When most young people say they believe in socialism, what they really believe in is social programs.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say something like, this is just lack of information. They'll say, well, a democratic socialist like Denmark. And I'll say, well, you know, the Denmark government actually isn't a socialist government. Did you know that? They have a lot of social programs.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, so you like social programs? Yeah. Okay. In Denmark, where it's not a socialist country, it's actually a capitalistic free market country, where do you think they get their money? Where's the government get its money from? Now I'm trying to get them to think.
Yeah.
And they'll go, well, probably taxes. Okay. So taxing the people. Where do the people get their money from? Well, from working. Okay. And what system are they working in order to generate income and derive income that the government can tax it and then use it to pay for social programs?
Yep.
Capitalism. Okay. All right. Yeah, did you see what just happened? And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Now I get it.
Yeah, I saw a meme the other day, not to bring memes into our radio show, but it was a meme of Bernie Sanders walking into a bar saying, free drinks, who's paying? Was kind of the idea there. And I thought, man, that's saying it exactly,
yeah, it is.
Right.
That's exactly, you know? Right. So how will philosophy help us engage in this crazy world?
Yeah, sure. Great question. So a lot of times when we think about college majors, for example, we always think about, you know, the cash value of it, so to speak. What can I do with it? What job can I get from it? And certainly, the last thing I want to do is sort of attack the idea of going to college to learn a skill set so you can get a specific job. The fact is we need nurses. We need engineers.
Sure.
We need people to do those types of things. And that does indeed require certain kinds of training. But the truth be told, in this country, of the jobs that require a four-year degree, 65 to 70% of them don't care what the degree is in, right?
Wow.
And so because of that, folks coming out of a liberal arts tradition really do have a vast amount of opportunity before them to do just about anything they want to do. And our students go off and do a lot of different things. And we're in a moment right now where the wind is in our sails for liberal arts curriculum, for degree programs like humanities or philosophy or history or English or something like that. Because more and more industry, organizations, institutions, and things of that nature, they want people that know how to think, that can think critically, can think outside the box, can solve problems and do all kinds of things like that. And frankly, that's what philosophy does. I tell my students all the time, I didn't realize this until pretty well into my career, but the philosopher's job is to be creative. That's what we do. We solve, just like other folks in other disciplines.
Yeah, you question things and look for a solution
and
an answer.
We solve problems. They're intellectual problems, right? But we're at the end of the day, we're solving problems to the point that I say to my students, if you're not creative as a philosopher, you stink as a philosopher.
Yeah.
You're not just learning set logical rules and now obeying those rules again and again and again. No, you're learning these things and you're learning the jargon and the tools so that now when certain questions arise, you can think outside the box and think creatively. So what can you do with a philosophy degree, or what could you do after studying philosophy? I would argue that it equips you very well to go into any number of avenues or pathways in our culture, in our churches, in our government, in our businesses, across the board, and now leverage that knowledge base and that skill set and apply it to the problems that you face and be very, very successful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just is a discipline that opens up the doors for you in a very unique,
well, I think especially since we're talking about some of the challenges with millennials, and this is just a challenge. This is my dad, who's in heaven now, would call this the 80-20 split, where 80% of people are just really not very smart. They're ignorant. They're followers. They're not leaders. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of getting by, right? 20%. I actually think it's more like 94-6. But I tell my own students. I have 65 students every Thursday. I taught three classes today. I tell them if you learn to be a good communicator, audibly, and if you know how to do the written word, you're going to be so far ahead of your peers
right now,
who are really bad at it.
That's right.
And if you have an ability to think rightly and to think effectively and to think through things, which is what philosophy teaches
that's
you
right.
how to do, you can reason, you can judge, you can take information in and then understand it, process it, and then make a move forward.
That's right.
Most people are not like that at all.
That's exactly right.
That's why you have roughly 60% of millennials, like we've said, saying I have a positive reaction to both socialism and capitalism. That's because they're not thinking.
That's exactly right. Look, I tell people, if you can write, if you can think, if you can speak, and if you can lead,
you are a
powerful, powerful tool. And this is a little bit broad. The comment here is a little bit broader than just philosophy, but this is worth saying to your listeners. You know, Christian parents, we live in a world where the wheels are coming off in moral decay and moral chaos right now. And to be honest, it's a little unnerving to bring children into this world right now, right? And so parents, Christian parents, I think especially, are sometimes freaking out about this.
Well, Ocasio-Cortez would tell you that you probably shouldn't because the world's going to end in 12 years.
So. And so it's scary. But look, here's what I want to say to Christian parents is that, look, industry, institutions, organizations, businesses still have to have responsible people.
Yeah, there you go.
Capable people, competent people, good people. And no matter what they think about your faith, if you have that, then you are a tremendously valuable asset. So parents,
well, God will train place your kids you before kings.
Yeah, that's right. Train your kids that way, and your children are going to have massive opportunities in this culture. Yeah. So I actually don't – I mean, yes, I do think when I look at our culture, there are some substantial problems that we're facing and going to keep facing.
Oh, man, yeah.
But I actually see that as a greater opportunity for the church and for believers than a big problem or challenge for the believers.
Yeah, and I think that again, if you can be successful in the business world because you have the ability to think and be rational and reason through things, and you're a good problem solver, which is really what philosophy and education in philosophy will teach you how to do, is to engage intellectually, where most people don't do that. Mm-hmm. Not only is the business world gonna reward you, the academic world would reward you, but now you put a kingdom focus in that.
Yeah.
And boy, you're really dangerous.
That's right.
For the kingdom. You're a really dangerous kingdom player at that point.
That's right. And at the not to make this about the college, but at the college at Southeastern, our mission statement is to equip students to give their life for the cause of Christ in the church, among the nations, and in every aspect of society. And that last piece is key to your comment right there. What our goal and our hope is that we want to train those students that go out into culture and infiltrate every aspect of culture.
Absolutely.
Because they have those skills that we've just been talking about, infiltrate our culture, and there from those places leverage their life for the cause of Christ.
Yeah, and that's like our oldest, when he said he's out now, he's 23, and he's on his own. He graduated college before he turned 21. He was just in a fast-paced program down at a media arts school in Orlando called Full Sail. But when he was like, I want to go into game art. Hmm. And I'm like, and just at the school he went to, Full Sail, probably 98% unbelievers. But he's a sharp kid. Mm-hmm. He's been well-trained. He's a good apologist. And so he's got a sound philosophical basis. And now he's going into all these places where a lot of Christian parents would say, you want to go in the video game industry? No, don't do that. Yeah. No video games. That's all of the devil. Don't get. And he's in there and has great sway and has great opportunities to engage. And they don't know what to do with him because he's friendly, he's loving, he's kind, he's compassionate, he's really smart, and he's a good apologist, and he loves people because of the gospel.
Yeah.
And now you're like, all right, let's play this game. Guess what city? He's going there in May. He wants to end up working there. This is the number one place in America. He's like, there's nothing left in the country except this one city that he wants to move to. This is the last city that most American Christian parents would want their kids to live in. Which would it be?
I'm guessing Seattle.
Nope. You're close, though.
L.A.?
San Francisco.
Okay, San Francisco.
Well, it's like Seattle, L.A., San Francisco, Sodom, Gomorrah, right? So most people would say that.
Yeah.
And that's where he wants to go. And we have no reservations whatsoever about this young man going to San Francisco.
Yeah.
We actually kind of chuckle about it. We're like, oh, they're not going to know what to do with him.
Right.
And I sound like I'm bragging on my son, and I am a little bit, but that's if you have the ability to think and you're rational and you have a good philosophical mind and you love the Lord and you love people and you have a good apologetic.
Yep. You put it all together and it is a powerful
That's
cocktail.
Pretty awesome.
Yep. Sure is.
And so you've got your young son on the other side of the glass here today who is not knowing how well you're being trained in there, Samuel. You are, dude.
He's a smart little fellow too.
That's awesome. Well, of course, because look who his mom is. So what are we waiting for? Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. Tomorrow will be a fast-paced and really interesting show. Former Governor Mike Huckabee calling in for the first segment. He's going to be here in town. Actually, I'll be introducing him here in Raleigh, North Carolina in a couple weeks at a crisis pregnancy center, Gateway Crisis Pregnancy Center, just a great crisis resource center here in Raleigh, right down literally across the street from NC State University. What a great place, unfortunately, to have a crisis pregnancy center. So he's going to be with me for the first segment tomorrow. Daryl Lefevre is one of my two producer friends that brought Unplanned really to the screen coming up on March 29th. That's next Friday. It opens nationwide. So Daryl Lefevre is going to call in and talk about what's going on with Unplanned across the country, and we'll talk about some news of the day. After I race out of here tonight, I'm going to go to the west, to Kernersville, which is kind of near. That if you're out of state, you don't know what I'm talking about. Due west on I-40. It's about an hour and a half from here, hopefully, because we have a 7 o'clock showing. I'll leave here at about 10 after 5, so it's kind of a wild ride here lately, but well worth it, especially because it's the cause of life. Next to the gospel, I can't think of another cause that should deserve as much attention as that one. And so that's why we're running hard on this, and we'll continue to do so through the end of next week. So you're going to hear a lot of unplanned stuff next week, too. I'm going to be the thorn in your side, because we all have an obligation as followers of Christ. Every committed Christian I know – says they're pro-life. The question is, the follow-up question, which most of us don't like to ask, except I do, is, okay, that's awesome. Praise the God, praise the Lord. What are you doing with that belief other than saying it? What are you doing? What are you doing for the cause of life? At the very minimum, we'd be praying and then investing financially. Have you ever stood in front of an abortion clinic ever? Do you even know where one is? Have you ever engaged that darkness? Well, one of my friends that works at Love Life here in North Carolina, he said the other night, Jamie, after we watched Unplanned with a group of about 170 people here in town, he said, seeing this movie is like being able to see Schindler's List in 1943 while things are still happening. Yeah. And you see what's happening. We didn't know specifically what was happening in those death camps till towards the end. But once you know, now you have knowledge, and with knowledge comes responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just don't want to see it.
Right.
It doesn't disrupt your life if you ignore it.
Right.
But
right.
We're in the middle of a Holocaust, not just here in America, but a worldwide one.
So let me ask you real quick.
Yeah, sure.
You mentioned some things, praying, giving, standing from, any other things that I know I'm playing host here. What else would you say we need to do?
I think that certainly being involved with a crisis pregnancy center at some level, whether it's just financially, being on their prayer team. My wife is a volunteer now. She's a client advocate, so she meets with abortion-minded girls every Wednesday.
Yeah.
She's down there. Oftentimes, the abortion, the client advocates at crisis pregnancy centers, somebody else said this on Tuesday night as well, oftentimes they're the last one to see that baby alive.
Mm.
And they know what happens because these girls and women come in and they're abortion-minded. Some of them are just there because they can't afford to go get an ultrasound anywhere else. But a lot of them come in, they're abortion-minded, and they find out because they don't come back that they're going to go through with the abortion. And oftentimes when they do that ultrasound, you're the last person. These counselors are the last people who see that baby alive, that care about that baby being alive.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dealing with death and blood all the time. So we need to be praying for them. There's other organizations on a nationwide level. There's ones that deal with Save the Storks is an organization that builds out custom vans that are mobile crisis pregnancy center units. Yeah. Love Life here in North Carolina, where they unify the church to go out and literally just pray and do praise and worship outside abortion clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a dirty little secret that comes up in Unplanned, which came out as a result of Abby Johnson and others that have worked at Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood knows. They have the numbers. When there's Christians outside of an abortion clinic praying, their no-show rates skyrocket.
Really?
Their no-show rates go up as high as 75%.
Wow.
If there's Christians outside praying, and you think about that, philosophically, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
I think an abortion-minded woman showing up, she sees people praying. It reminds her that thing inside of her is not a clump of tissue, that it's sacred. Why do we pray? Why are people praying? Because they believe in something supernatural, something above our just physical realities. It's the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they're made in God's image. They know that child inside of them is real. It's a baby. They're a mother. It brings the divine into the picture, and a lot of them just can't take it, and they turn around and they go away just because we're there praying.
Man, I keep beating the drum, brother,
because
I think I've often been convicted. You're right. We do say this. We vote.
Yeah, we vote, and that's another way. That's super important.
It's super important, there's got to be
that's
more
a safe distance.
Yeah.
And again, I think this makes a lot of people uncomfortable, but let's transfer ourselves back. Would we be a complacent Christian or pastor in Nazi Germany, or would we be Dietrich Bonhoeffer?
Yeah.
Would you stand up and cry out, or would you just sing a little louder?
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. I mean, there's people that that are still alive that have shared the testimony of the church being located near the train tracks where the trains full of Jews are going, and they would hear that, and they didn't want to hear it, so they sang a little louder.
Yeah.
Then recently I heard a testimony from an actual Holocaust survivor there were churches close enough to the death camps that they would hear the bells and they would hear him singing, and
wow,
they never showed up.
Wow.
And isn't that us? I mean, we're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
We live in Nazi Germany right now. We have since 1973.
Yeah.
And he killed 6 million Jews, and the abortion industry's killed 60 million babies.
Wow.
So who's more guilty? I think clearly we are. So, yeah, thanks for investing in that.
Absolutely.
Okay, give me some kind of practical. Where do we see philosophy really off the rails today? Obviously in the life issue. That's a real obvious one.
Yep.
But what about this whole gender confusion?
Sure.
Now, Facebook, we're looking at Facebook Live. Facebook's up to about 75 different options, if you know how to get into them, on gender.
Wow.
75.
Wow.
I thought it was two, innie or an outie. But no, now it's 75. So isn't philosophy behind all that kind of stuff too?
Yeah, absolutely. Some level. I mean, people are making worldview assumptions. They're operating with some basic background ideas. They then argue from those, construe new ideas from those as well. So absolutely, philosophy is involved in that. So so definitely transgender stuff. Ethics is a major area where philosophy comes into play. We tend to think of ethics today as a different discipline, but actually historically ethics was just a sub-discipline of philosophy. Huh. And you think about the ethical and moral relativism of our day, chaos at play.
Well, listen, the number one ethics professor at Princeton, a guy named Sanger, his saying is a dog is a pig is a rat is a boy. Mm-hmm. Philosophically, ethically, morally, there's no difference between them.
Right.
He also believes that a parent should be able to euthanize their child up to 2 years of age.
Yeah.
That is a college professor, the head of the ethics program at Princeton.
That's right. And so what I would say to Christians on that is, so what are you going to do? Quote the Bible to him?
Yeah.
You know, he's already rejected
Good
that.
Good luck.
Yeah, he's already rejected it. So how are you going to engage that idea as it picks up steam and fuel in our culture?
Sure.
This is a reason why we've tried to engage philosophically, because, you know, on the level of ideas, that's what's at play there. And so we have to take that on head on in these contexts. And so –
is there a way to answer the question, what's the most dangerous philosophy on the planet?
Maybe.
You know what I'm getting at? Is there an overriding philosophy behind a lot of this real twisting of reality?
Yeah, and so this is where my Christian theism is going to come out very strongly here. I think that the problem of the world, when you think about how God made the world, he made the world and he made the creatures of the world, namely us, to turn ourselves to him for his glory, for his honor, but also for our good. And sin, or what the Old Testament calls idolatry, or what we could call today the muck and the mess, is a turning of creation away from the Creator to ourselves. And so it's to dethrone God, so to speak, from the center of everything and to put ourselves on that throne. I think really, frankly, you could trace all of the problems back down to that move right there. And so it manifests itself in dozens and dozens and dozens of ways throughout our culture and throughout our history. But at core, that's the key move. Now, we want to think about that as well as we possibly can. We want to be able to articulate that as clearly as we possibly can. But at the end of the day, we also don't want to shy away from the fact that there really is a spiritual dimension to the wrong philosophies that have overtaken us past, present, and that will overtake us in the future as well.
What would you suggest if there's plenty of parents listening and even grandparents listening, what would you suggest are some tools or resources or a way to train our children and young adults to be good philosophers?
So I know a really good
the book that's coming out in 2 weeks by Dr. Dadu and his friend Paul Gould, Philosophy, A Christian Introduction. But books is a huge part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is written for
That's written for people with no background in philosophy.
Like normal people.
Yeah, we Paul and I both see ourselves as translators, if you will.
Got it, good.
We translate the academy to lay people with no background in philosophy. So that's written for somebody who's never really studied philosophy at all. They should be able to pick that book up, and yes, it probably will in a number of places in the book stretch them and challenge them and take them to the edge of their intellect at times. But honestly, if you work through it, you'll be able to follow that book. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. And there's there's a glossary in the back when we hit terms and jargon and stuff that you don't know. So yes, read, think. But it doesn't mean that you have to read just philosophy books. Again, given the fact that philosophy is a nosy discipline, it gets into everything. So reading novels helps. Read classical literature. That's one of the reasons I love our English program here. You know, the show's kind of today been all about philosophy, but in our English programs, and in the great literature of the world, I mean, this is all philosophical stuff that people are doing and saying through story and through narrative. And so read broadly, right? You know, put the phone down, turn the TV off, and read something.
Yeah, the average American adult reads less than one full book a year.
Yeah. Engage in conversation.
Oh, man.
Without pontificating the whole
Love
time.
Love it.
Right?
That's
Engage
the hard
in
part.
Real conversation where real people ask hard questions. Don't pretend that you know the answer. Actually engage it and think it through.
Yeah.
So I think when you start putting those things together, you actually situate yourself to be a real learner. And I think in this culture today, that's what we've got to do.
And if your son or daughter wants to go to college and study philosopher, Jamie Du says?
I don't think it's as problematic as going into some other disciplines. Actually, in the American Academy and in the British Academy or European Academy, you can be a faithful Christian in philosophy departments today. And so I would not necessarily be concerned about
that. Yeah, that's so good to hear. Thank you so much, Jamie, for being here today and walking us down this road. Super important. And like you said, it's a nosy business because philosophy gets into everything. And that's why we should study it. Philosophy, A Christian Introduction, coming out in 2 weeks by Dr. Jamie Dew and Paul M. Gould. We'll put that link up when it's available. And Jamie, thanks for being here, buddy.
You bet.
All right, friends, this is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon.